Okay, so this is our first experimental online poly instruction course. We're dealing with a text that was created by one of my students as a result of a course that I gave in Sri Lanka some years ago, which in turn is based on the Thai grammar texts. And so the text we have with us is two of the four texts, which is about, well, half of the grammar that you have to know to have a basic understanding of Pali grammar. So this isn't complete. This is half of the course. So if we ever get through this, we'll then I'll have to break out the Thai version, and y'all can help me create the second half of this text. But for now, we have the basics of learning about letters and words and basic conjugations and that kind of thing. So today's lesson is going to be, I don't know how far we get. We could just go as far as we want. But to start, we learn about the alphabet. Now, the thing that is great about the Thai grammar texts, in my mind, is that they follow the ancient structured methodology, or, you know, pattern of studying Indian languages. It's the, as I understand, it's the Panini method for studying Sanskrit. When I learned Sanskrit before I learned Pali, so I went to university and studied a year of pretty intensive Sanskrit, and it was quite well structured. I was impressed by how well the course was structured to make it easy to understand. Very difficult to learn because it involves a lot of memorization, and it's all just put out there for you. And this is the reason why in modern times it's not taught this way so often, is simply, I think, because people are too lazy to memorize. So rather than give you everything all at once, which is useless if you don't memorize it, they give it to you piece by piece. And giving it to you piece by piece, which is the modern way of studying Pali, doesn't ever give you a very good picture at all of the grammar and the language. And it winds up being a disservice in my mind. And I think many people agree with this, because it's a shortcut, or it's a simplification. It's this Western methodology of understanding rather than memorizing. And so Asian Buddhists are always saying, stop thinking and start memorizing. It's all about, in the beginning, memorizing. To the extent that in Thailand, I think they go too far, but they have the novices memorize, and I tried to memorize these Thai grammar texts. I could never do it because it was Thai and I didn't want to be memorizing the Thai language. It just seemed like a useless endeavor. If it had been in Pali, I might have thought about it, but I could never get through them because, you know, it's just going too far. There's this Thai teacher who was a prince, and you've got to memorize his explanations, which seems a bit much. But definitely, if you really want to learn Pali, if you really want to get the most out of this, you really should consider memorizing almost everything that's in this Pali textbook, which is quite daunting. I think most people don't ever even consider such an activity, but it is a huge part. I mean, language is at least 50% memorization, probably more. So that being said, this is a highly structured and very well organized, in my mind, means of learning a language. And it highlights how well organized Pali and Sanskrit actually are. English probably wouldn't be easily subjected to this treatment, but here we have it. So the first step is to dissect what we mean by language, right? And if you ever study linguistics, they do this as well. They start with phonetics, right? Phonetics is the study of letters, sounds. And then there is, what's the next step up? Syntax? Or no, I'm going too far. But anyway, it's from the smallest. The smallest is phonetics. And then it's going to words. So we have letters, then words, then phrases, and then sentences. And then it gets into style and so on. And that's basically how this goes. So we start off from the very essence of what we mean by language, and that's the letters. And so the ancient polygrammers start with atto akarasang atto akarasanyato. The meaning is known by the letters. It's a famous saying that they try to attribute to the Buddha. I'm not really, well, I mean, who knows? But somehow they say that the Buddha said this about a monk who, there was a monk, this old monk sitting by the water practicing meditation, and he was thinking about the rise and the fall, and he was reminding himself, rise and fall, rise and fall, which would be Uddaya Bayang, Uddaya Bayang. Uddaya means rise and Baya means fall. So he was reminding himself, using this as his mantra, Uddaya Bayang. But then he started getting sleepy, and he was apparently sitting by this lake, and there was a swan or a bird of some sort out on the water. And so he started to get muddled in his head, and he started saying Uddakappakang, Uddakappakang, which means bird on the water, instead of Uddaya Bayang. And the Buddha noticed this, that he had mixed things up, and as a result, totally lost the subject of his meditation and was instead focusing on this bird on the water. And so the Buddha shook his head and said, Atto Agarasanyato. The words are important, the letters are important. But this is the legend. It's not in the Tipitaka, it's one of it's the legend of how Mahakachayana, he took that sentence and he created a grammar out of it. So he first started talking about letters. And so this is where we start. Atto akarasanyato. The meaning starts with the letters. So akara means letter in Pali. There are two types of letters. There are the sara and the byanjana. And so you'll often be instructed to write. This is the first lesson in memorization. It's not that difficult. But you'll be instructed to write these three groups. Right? So you have the sara. And then you have these ones, the sawaga, and then you have the awaga. And this is the alphabet. Like in English, we have A, B, C, D, E. So you would write this out in a grid. Right? The first line, you write these out. And then you have these five lines. You don't have to write the guttural and stuff, but you have to write out each of the five. There's 25 letters here. And then you have these eight down at the bottom. Sorry?
Yeah, there's no Z in Pali.
No, and there's no F. Yeah, it's the same as the Sinhala alphabet. No, actually, the Sinhala alphabet is just the Pali alphabet. Thai as well. Cambodian as well. Burmese as well. Most of them have added a couple of letters. Like Thai actually has the letter F added. And some vowels added as well. But for the most part, it'll be ordered in the same way. And now you know where the Sinhala alphabet got their order. Be ordered just as this one is ordered. A.K. Warder has this book called Introduction to Pali, which is, in my mind, just the most horrible means of learning a language that is could ever be given. But a lot of people like the book, and it is actually okay as a reference. But I certainly wouldn't recommend it. In the back of the book, anyway, there's sheet charts for each of the scripts, the Pali alphabet in Sinhalese, Devanagari, Burmese, Thai, Cambodian, all these different scripts. That's kind of nice to have. Anyway, let's stick to this text. Okay, so the first group is called Sara. Sara, we translate it as vowel, but literally it means essence. So the vowels in Pali are considered to be the essence. And if you think about it, all of this, the explanation or the explanation of surrounding all of the letters is scientific. You'll see as we go through it. The reason they're called the essence is because you can't say anything without a vowel, right? This is why in the English language every word has at least one vowel in it. Without a vowel, there's no word, because without a vowel, you're not saying anything. On the other hand, there are some words that are just vowels. We know this as well. So the sara is the essence. And another thing this means is this defines a syllable. When we get down to the next section on rhythm and stress, we'll start talking about syllables. The sara is the essence of the syllable. So one vowel, one syllable. One syllable, one vowel. Vyanjana. I'm pretty sure that the one that separates is somewhere in the text, so they explain it. But Vyanjana means sort of the tacked on stuff. So when you tack these other ones on, you can tack them on at the beginning before one of the vowels, or you can tack them on after one of the vowels. You can put a couple of them. Well, no, it's not exactly like that. You can put both at the beginning and at the end of the vowel. But you actually don't, that's not true. For the most part, you don't put two consonants together in one syllable. So when you see like sawaga, syllabically, is that a word? Sa is a syllable. Wait. Wa is a syllable. A wug is a syllable with a consonant tacked on before and after. And ga is a syllable. It's a bit important. It isn't terribly important, but it'll be a little bit important in regards to rhythm and stress. But the point is that the vyanjana are tacked on consonants. In English, obviously, these are the consonants. So all of these are vyanjana, the sawaga and the awaga. Altogether, we have 25 plus 16 is 41. 41 letters in the Pali language, if we haven't left anything out here. Okay. This again, none of these symbols here are the original symbols used. So these are actually just an agreed upon standard by Western Pali scholars. They're not entirely agreed upon either. This one down here at the bottom, some people put the dot on top. I prefer the dot on bottom, but there's actually quite a heated argument. I wrote a program with the whole Pali Tipitaka in it, and I put the dot on the bottom, and some people were up in arms explaining to me and giving me arguments as to why the dot had to be on top. We made a chanting book in Jomtong, and we had a big argument about it. Not an argument, we had a debate. It wasn't an argument because it wasn't heated, but there was a huge debate, and I put forth my arguments as to why it should be under, and he put forth his arguments as to why it should be on top. It was kind of funny, actually. It was well, you know, that wasn't a real argument. It was just a debate many, many years ago. Please don't highlight. If you can, leave your cursor up at the top just to be clear where my cursor is. Put your cursor way up at the top because I know everyone's got a cursor and you're just making it hard for people to read.
Yeah, there's a viewing mode you can go into. You can try doing that.
Yeah. How do you go to viewing mode?
All right. The suggestion section at the top right. You click the drop-down arrow and you click viewing.
I don't have that.
Yeah, it says suggestions at the top right.
Suggestions?
Yeah, on the toolbar.
Oh, with the pencil.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and you click on the drop. It's a green button.
Yeah, not for me, but
well, I can do it.
Yeah,
I did that. I'm in viewing, but now it's not showing where Bante is highlighting.
Oh well, in viewing mode you can't edit, so.
Well, stay in editing. That's fine. Just don't move your cursor around, please. Anyway, whatever. Not that big of a deal, but it is a bit. Makes the text a bit hard to read. Another thing we could do, but anyway, we'll stick with this for now. Okay, so let's start with the Sara. And so, as I said, these are just Western agreed upon symbols, and so we have to explain which these refer to. These two, the first two, are a group. The second two are a group, the third and the fourth one. And the fifth and the sixth one are a group, which means they sound exactly the same. This is important. So first thing we can say, every letter in Pali theoretically sounds exactly the same no matter where it occurs in a word or a phrase. Or no matter who says it, it should sound exactly the same. It never changes. Like in English, you have no clue. There's no clue or hint as to how to pronounce most of the letters until you've heard someone say it once. In Pali, that's not the case. Once you know how these vowels and consonants sound, that never changes, no matter where they are. That's an important first point to make. So a and a will always sound like that. The only difference between them is the a is short and the a is long. It's interesting because Sinhalese people have this odd practice of changing them. Sankha, can you tell me how these sound?
Yeah, it's a a e e u u e e e o.
Okay, so when you say namo tassa.
Namo dasa.
So you said namo tassa.
Namo dasa.
So the a at the end, it's changed short. A little bit. Well, it's not shortened, it's u. It actually becomes u. Namo tassa.
Right.
I think you're right that it's not quite changed, but most Sinhalese people do change it a little bit.
Well, actually, the ending letter is so that is made up of us and so it becomes
Well, see, da, sa, they should both be exactly the same. Are they in Sinhala? Unless it's da, sa, da, sa would sound to me the same, but da, sa doesn't sound the same anymore.
Actually, if you say namo dasa, that is not correct.
Why not?
Namo das, I mean, in Sinhala.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. In Sinhala, I'm not really trying to criticize, but it's always been something that disturbed me because it's just that they say what you say, that it's not correct, when in fact it should be exactly the same. Da, sa, da, sa. The a should be exactly the same in both syllables.
Right. If we go by the Pali standards.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So anyway. of course, every language has changed it. If you listen to the Khmer that we're Cambodian that we're doing, it's ia. The long a becomes ia, which sounds really crazy. And Thai gets really weird. All the languages change it. But
is it the same standard in Sanskrit, Bhante?
Yes. Well, that's where I got the same. I haven't actually heard it. I'm not sure that I've heard it for Pali, but it's the Sanskrit standard. In Sanskrit, it definitely is the case where every vowel, every letter is meant to have a specific sound.
I see.
It's the same in Pali because there are specific rules to explain how to say each and every one of the letters. So they don't change.
I've always understood it to be Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa.
But you've probably heard the Thai way of saying it, but you know Thais mangle it in their own way. But or you've heard the Western way of saying it, which is usually actually based partly on the Thai. The best pronunciation besides these Western monks who have, well, sorry, it sounds kind of prejudiced, but you know they've gone back to the roots, but that's not even true. No, I think Sri Lankan is still the best pronunciation that I've seen. But there's a group in northeast Thailand that has a pretty good pronunciation. They've tried their hardest to be true. They still don't get the T's with the dot under them. But we'll get into that. Anyways, let's go by what I say, okay? As the teacher, I'm saying to you in this class, these letters sound a specific way and they don't change. A, I, E, U, U, A, O. And so when I learned Sanskrit, our first task was to go into the bathroom in front of the mirror. I can't remember why it was in front of the mirror, but we're supposed to go into a room where we could be by ourselves and say these to ourselves. A, I, E, U, U, A, O. So the bar on top simply makes the vowel longer. That's all it does. Which means the first, third, fifth are all short vowels, and this is a bit important at certain times. And the second, fourth, and sixth are all long. The A and the O are always long. And some people say that technically they are at times short, but it's a technicality. For all intents and purposes, we consider them to be long. It's just consider them to be long, and you'll be fine. Most important thing about the vowels that everyone always gets wrong is this letter here is called the letter A. Get that stuck in your head because it becomes a bit of an embarrassment if you start saying it, pronouncing it as we do in English. It's not the letter E, it's not pronounced E ever. It's always pronounced A. That's how it's pronounced. That's what it's called. It's called the letter A, and it's pronounced A.
Thank you. I had so much problem with that.
Maybe some. If you could, you guys should take notes, right? Is anyone actually taking notes? Probably not yet.
I'm going to now.
Might be a good idea to start taking notes, and then you could even, you know, edit this text later. You know, it'd be a good thing to have in there. Okay, and the next one is the letter O, and it's always pronounced O. Again, A-E-E-U-U-A-O. That's how they're pronounced. Please don't do any highlighting. Please keep your cursors out. Okay. That's Sara. There's not much to know there. The second group here, the first group of the Byanjana, of the consonants, is a little more interesting. That's a lot more interesting. It's actually quite complex. So get your pens out. And I'm assuming people can see my highlighting?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So this is going to get a bit complicated. Let's start at the beginning. First, we have them grouped, which means these five are five groups. Why are they grouped? They're grouped because of these words here. And these are Western words. They're not the exact words that are used in Pali, but they are the meaning of those words. These five are grouped according to the tana, the place of origin. Okay, so each of these first five is called a guttural because they occur in the back of your throat. Something you probably never thought of before. So if you say all of these, k, k, g, g, ng, they all occur in the back of the throat. K, k, g, k, g, g, ng. They all occur back there. And they're in English called gutturals for that reason. The second group all occur at the palate, which is the top of your mouth. That's the origin of the sound. Ja, cha, ja, ja, nya. The third group occurs at the alveopalatial ridge, which is the ridge at the front of your mouth, between your teeth and the top of the roof of your mouth. So that ridge, right? The ridge that is between the top of your mouth and your teeth. If you put your tongue behind that, right? So kind of curl your tongue up behind that ridge, and then say da. Try to say the letter T. Da. If you say it from that position, it gives it an Indian sound. And so my Sanskrit teacher, it was a guy from New York. He said, so this is how, and he was being kind of, I don't know if it's even racist, but kind of funny anyway. He said, if you want to sound like an Indian person, just put your tongue in the back behind that ridge and start talking like normal, and you'll sound like an Indian person. And it's true, because to some extent, because it's one of the few cultures that I know of that actually uses those sounds and is comfortable using those sounds. And so they sound a little bit different because they use that part of the mouth. So these are the hardest ones. And these, I haven't come across any culture. I'm not even sure if the Sri Lankans are able to get it. Sankan could probably tell us more, but certainly the Thais, the Burmese, the Laotian, you know, all these groups totally miss this one, as far as I can see. They aren't able to do that. They don't try to do that. They aren't taught to actually say these. And it's fun chanting, trying to do the chanting and actually say these the proper way as a Westerner. I've tried to for the most part. And I do actually, you know, wanna, ayu wanna, wanna is a retroflex using the alveopalatial ridge. So to say these, it would be da ta da da na. And you can hear, hopefully, that sounds a little bit different from ordinary T's and D's and N's.
Bhante, the second one is the, right?
I'm not sure. What do you mean by that?
Starts with the.
Oh, what have I done here? I've destroyed one. Well, what have I done? The dentals, though. Right now we're on the alveopalatials. Is that what you're referring to? The missing letter?
Yeah. T, t. No, I'm trying to guess the second letter because...
Da, ta, da, da, na. Anyway, I'll go through them slower after this, but I just want to get the groups established. So this group is putting your tongue behind that ridge. That's how it's done. That's how you get that distinctive Indian sound. This is the group that does that. The fourth group, the dentals, are the ones that we use in the West. It's quite, and, you know, in the East as well. These are the much more common T's and D's. So these are accomplished by touching the tongue actually to the teeth. That's why they're called dentals. Da-tha, da-dha-na. The fifth one, the labials, are accomplished by touching the sound occurs, tana, this is the location. The location is at the lips. So ba pa ba ba ma, all of those ones occur at the lips. Interesting, huh? Totally different from the English alphabet, which makes, of course, no sense. It's totally unorganized.
The third one is actually there in the single alphabet, Bhante.
But do you actually put the... It's there, but do you actually put your tongue behind the ridge? When you say it?
Say it, ta-ta.
You're not doing it, I don't think. Are you putting your tongue behind that ridge?
Not so far.
Yeah, see, that no one does it. It's, well, I believe in certain places in India they still sound like this. Some of the languages. I don't think Sinhala does.
I can't think of a word that comes up with that.
Well, like ditti, you know, ditti is actually uses this, but of course you'll say it ditti like an ordinary ditti, ditti, vanna, vanna. It is hard to hear, but if you're not putting your tongue behind the ridge, you're not doing it.
Ditti and vanna.
That sounds better. Are you putting your tongue behind the ridge?
Behind the ridge in the sense behind the top of the...
It's your tongue, the tip of your tongue will almost touch the roof of your mouth because there's that ridge that you put it behind. You understand what I mean by ridge? If you touch your tongue to the roof of your mouth, it's pressing against that front part. And that front part is called the alveopalatial ridge.
I see.
It's a retroflex. In English we call it, that's how you say R actually. I can't do it. To say r, you use that ridge as well, you see. This is why R is the retroflex. So I'll explain these as well. Let's go through them next. The awaga are just ungrouped. They're actually kind of grouped. The first five are liquids, I believe. Liquids means they have no stop. You see, they're liquid. They have a certain quality to them. The S and H are sibilants. This is linguistics. Sibilants. And number 41 is a special one. It's called the Nigahita or the Anuswara. Has two names. In Pali, I'm pretty sure we prefer the word Nigahita. And the Nigahita, well, let's save it for last. We'll go through all of these now. Just the vowel itself is going to take up a whole lesson today. I'm starting to think, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into here? I just wanted to learn how to chant. Well, in order to even just chant, you have to get the sounds right. Okay. So, I can't actually explain to you what each of these letters sounds like without first explaining to you why there are the letters that there are. See, there's even more order here than just that. The first order we have is the location. The second aspect, you'll see that these first two letters here, they're actually the same letter, right? One of them has a thing on the end. And so it's always funny to hear, not funny, but it's actually kind of, well, anyway, kind of cringeworthy, I suppose, to hear newcomers to Theravada Buddhism say Theravada, right? We've all done it. The Theras. Theravada. It's not, though. That H there, this is the English, and what's the other one? Some people, when you get the PH, like in Thai, they have the word pra, and they've adopted the, for some reason, the PH, even though it shouldn't at all be, there shouldn't be an H there at all. And so because we spell it P-H-R-A, everyone says fra yutadamo. I get that a lot. But no, this H is simply an English way, agreed upon way, a Romanized way of indicating what we call aspiration. So we're going to have two more determining factors. Okay, so let's move these. This should all be in a table, and hopefully someone can put it in a table at some point. But we're going to move these last ones out because they don't quite belong in what I'm about to say. But these first four, there are four of them because they're actually the same motion of the, or the same action in the mouth, differentiated by two factors. It's the same letter, but it's just different. It has different qualities to it. The first quality is called aspiration, and the second quality is called voicing. So this H here signifies aspiration. And the difference between these two and these two is voicing. If I can explain. First, aspiration. Aspiration is a word that, it's an interesting word actually in English, but in this sense it refers simply to the act of expelling air. So I mean, there's a lot of interesting little tidbits that you get from learning Pali. And our first lesson here is how to say the word karma, because we're mostly all saying it wrong. We say, oh, you've got really bad karma. And that's not a word in Pali. There's no word in Sanskrit. There's no word karma that I know of. The word is karma, and this is because K by itself is unaspirated. There's no H. In English, it's the difference between skate, which is unaspirated K, and kate, which is an aspirated K. You can say it to yourself now and just mute yourself and then say skate and kate. Unfortunately, in English, we're used to, when the K comes by itself, to always aspirating it, as far as I know. And so when we see the word karma, we say it as karma. But those are two very different words. And in Pali, it, unfortunately for all of you guys, makes a big difference. So if you want to say a word correctly, you have to have the correct aspiration. If you want to say the word kamma, which is the Pali version of the word karma, you have to say it as I just said it, karma. No ha on the k. For most Western people, this is a bit difficult, and so you can practice it. Karma. That's the first letter. That's the basic action, basic sound for all four of these. The second one, you just add aspiration, so it's k, 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 k. The third one and the fourth one, you add something else, and this, as I said, is voicing. So if you listen to those first two, there was no rattling of my voice box. There was no vibrating of my voice box during that. The voice box didn't move. As a result, you didn't hear my voice. The second two are the same as the first two, but they're now voiced. G, 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 g. So when you say the word sangha, you really do have to aspirate it. It's not sangha. That's not correct. We don't have a sangha in Buddhism. We have a sangha. And my Sanskrit teacher said, you really have to sound like you're being punched in the stomach. That's the correct way to, well, it's the correct way to practice it anyway, for someone who is uninitiated. The Cambodians are good at enunciating this. I still think Sinhalese have a better pronunciation, but Cambodians really pronounce it. So they say, sanghang, sanghang.
Bante, one thing I've heard suggested before is that if you put your fingers in front of your mouth for aspirated consonants, you can actually feel the breath on your fingers, whereas for unaspirated ones, you can't.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I've heard that before, but that's definitely good advice. I mean, it's a lot to learn. You have to learn new techniques of speaking. When I first started, I'll never forget our first lesson. I'll never forget the sentence that I was asked to speak. So to test this all out, we were given Sanskrit. And if you think this is tough, what I'm going to put you through, or what you've got to go through in Pali, don't ever try to learn Sanskrit because it's awful. So we're going through this list of sentences, and I get, of course, the absolute worst sentence possible. Rukshe tishtati kakaha. Rukshe tishtati kakaha. Which is a very, very hard sentence to say. I'm probably not even saying it right now. In Pali, it would be Rukhe tishtati kako. Rukhe tithati kako. But in Sanskrit, because you have some T's without the dots and some T's with the dots, it's a very hard sentence. But yeah, it's a lot to learn.
I'm glad we don't have to learn Sanskrit as well.
Sanskrit's more difficult, much more difficult, and not as fluid as well. It's not as nice of a language in my mind. It's better formally speaking, because it was quite artificial. So it actually makes more sense than Pali. It's more clear about what its parts are, because it doesn't try to make it easier to say. It keeps it quite formal. As a result, it sounds quite harsh compared to Pali.
And I've been saying Sangha all along. This whole time I've been saying Sangha.
Yeah, now you got it right. That first time you said it was quite correct. Sangha. So now you know. And now you can extrapolate that to all of these. So what our teacher did is he put these at the top, which there's not quite enough room here, but I think I did it when I taught this as well. A minus V minus for the first one, and for the second one it was A plus V minus, and then it was A minus V plus, and then it was A plus V plus. A is aspiration, V is voicing. So that's the difference between the first one is unaspirated, unvoiced. The second one is aspirated, unvoiced. The third one is unaspirated, voiced. And the fourth one is voiced, aspirated. Write those symbols up at the top. Give yourself some room. That's what my teacher did. Because this is essential. This is how you, as I said, they never change. So once you know that, once you have that down, you can find any Pali word and you can figure out exactly how it sounds without ever having heard the word before. That's sort of the value of this. So when you have those headings at the top, it's the same all the way down. The first consonant in all of these rows is unvoiced, unaspirated. The second one is unvoiced, aspirated. Third one is voiced, unaspirated, voiced, aspirated. Now, the fifth one in each of these is nothing to do with voice. They're all voiced, but they're the nasals. They're the nasal sound, the sound that you get when you breathe through your nose, at making the sound at the specific tana, the specific location. So if you're doing it in the back of your throat, you're doing it at the top of your mouth, nya, nya. You do it at the alveopalatial ridge, you get na. If you do it at your teeth, you get na. You do it at your, with your lips, ma. These are the nasals. Okay, so that's voicing and aspiration, and as well as the nasals. We have a little bit more to go through here, and it's, there's really not much, I suppose. But it's something that we never really would have thought in English. We're never taught that P and B are actually the same letter, right? P is just unvoiced, whereas B is voiced. Otherwise, they're exactly the same. The only difference. T and D are exactly the same. Something we would have never thought in English, or I never thought anyway. But otherwise, it should be pretty self-explanatory at this point. The only sort of catch traps are first this one. This is the second gotcha. The first gotcha was the A, the letter A, right? Everyone gets that wrong. Well, then there was the TH and the PH, but that shouldn't be a big deal now. Now you know that the H is just a H, so this is not TH, this is T. This is not F, this is P. But then you have this letter C, and that's not the letter C, that's the letter JA. JA as in CH. CH, but without the aspiration. So if you can do that, cha, 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 it's the sound at the roof of your mouth that you get from making a clicking with your tongue flat against the roof of your mouth going cha, 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 cha. Then it's cha, 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 cha for the second one. And they're always like that. And this you'll always forget as well. So if you look down here at this example number two, one cha. And so when we do the five precepts, there's always someone who says banka, banka silani. It's a common mistake. It looks like banka, but it's not. It's always bancha, bancha silani. Both of these are. They're both cha, but this, the second one is just aspirated. Oh, and I guess it's important to note this as well. The G, letter G is always G. You'll never get a George sound from this. Never. G is always pronounced G. Just the this is the symbol that is meant to represent the sound G. The J is always this symbol, or these two symbols.
I've been getting that one wrong a lot. Also, the CA.
Yeah. CA will always be cha. Okay, now these ones. Right?
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, Bhante. How many letters are there in the fifth word? Amba? For mango?
Four.
Four Pali letters.
Yes.
Well, actually, in Sinhala, it's just two letters.
Well, that's because Sinhala end, it's just the script, actually. The script hides them. The script hides the letter A. They're there. Technically, those letters are there. It is four letters. But they're hidden in the script. that's just the script. Devanagari is similar. Thai is sort of similar, but it's not going to hide exactly. In Sinhala, this has to be two symbols.
Actually, it's a and umba. Umba is one letter.
Well, it's a conjunct. It can't be one. It's got to be a conjunct letter. It's two squished into one, right?
Right.
Umba is umba and ba squished together, right? Sort of.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's Devanagari does that as well. It squishes things. We had this funny. Our Sanskrit teacher said, when he took Sanskrit, the first thing his professor said to them, there was a group of people, maybe 20 people, and he said, half of you are going to fail this course. The first thing he said to them. So this is the first thing he said to us as well. And so we're all kind of being a bit macho, or some of us, a few of us were being kind of, I don't think I was really, but we were kind of, okay, we can do it. But there was this one big guy that I'll never forget, and he came to he was with us, we're all like, we think we can do it. And then came the day, a few days later, where he pulls out this sheet of conjunct consonants. Because I've seen some of them, I had to deal with them when I was using Sinhalese script. There are a few in Sinhalese, but I don't think there's nearly as many as there are in Devanagari. Devanagari squishes everything together, like changes everything. Some of them look nothing like the originals. Many of them do, but it squishes them together. That's just the script. It's just how it works. And he ran away. He took one look at this sheet and he dropped the course. And our teacher said, man, if he was scared of that, that's nothing compared to what we have to deal with later.
See.
Anyway, that's not really that pertinent. Anyway, let's try and get through this because we're out of time and we're almost done here. So these two, as I said, there's this first group. And these also have location, but it's not exact. Ya is a palatal. Ya, the sound is occurring at the roof of the mouth. Ra is curling the tongue back. And most of us know how to say ra, but if you want the technical description, it's the retroflex. Because the air goes over the tongue, over the center of the tongue. But it goes over the center of the tongue that is curled back. So you get this sound. Right? Different from if you just say if you curl your tongue back, you get right? It changes. That's called the retroflex. Consonant or letter. The L is a lateral. So the first L is dental. You put the tongue against the teeth and you get sound out of both sides. So it's called the lateral. When you get the sound out of both sides, we call that l. The fourth one is only differentiated because you're putting, instead of against the teeth, you're putting the tongue against the alveopalatial ridge. L. And the sound is a little bit different. So it's curled back. La, la. Very rare, that one. You don't see it that often. No, not very rare, but it's not common. The fifth one is, it's a bit, I'm still ambivalent. We were taught in Sanskrit that it's halfway between a V and a W. Halfway between. So it's not a W. Not pronounced W, according to our teacher. It's pronounced halfway between V and W. Halfway between. But then he said that generally in modern times, which I've found to be true, it's just pronounced as W, as a W. So it should actually be represented as a W, but it's not. So you can't really go wrong if you just say w. But never say v. It's certainly not v.
As in Vedana.
As in Vedana. Or Theravada, not the Theravada. It's funny to hear people say Theravada, which is so wrong on many levels, because it's Theravada. Theravada. That's how you can say that. Theravada.
I've heard Theravada too.
Yeah. And which leads us into the next section, which I think we might as well just finish this second section because it's very little. But the second section is the fun part. It's quite useful to make you sound like a veteran Pali scholar. So when you hear someone saying vipassana, you can correct them. Because it's not vipassana. Anyway, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We have a couple more things to say here. So these ones, anyway, they're fairly clear. The only gotcha will be the V, which is actually more like a W. Sa is simple. Ha is simple. Those are just like the Western ones. This last one, the Nigahita, you have to say quite a bit about it. But briefly, if it's unchanged, if it's unmodified, and unmodified means it doesn't come next to, if it doesn't come before any of these, by these I only mean the first four, right? If it comes before any of the first four in the vagas, then it'll be pronounced as the nasal in that group. So it changes. This one changes depending on what comes after it.
Does it sound like an NG sound when it comes to at the end?
Even if it's at the end of the word, technically it assimilates with the letter after it. So if you have the word, here, let me put... Have any here? No, we don't. Let's do Ahang Bante. Let me give you, first I'll give you, because I'm going to be lazy here. Well, let's not be lazy. But I should show you anyway, because I might be lazy at certain times. I'll show you the shorthand because our keyboards don't have all these letters on it. So how we do it, when we talk to people on emails, this is how we do it in emails. And then those ones are all the same. Then you have for the one here, you have this. For the one here, you have this. And for all of these, you have ta, ta, da, da, na. Those ones are all the same, and those ones are all the same. And then for the Nigahita, we do this. Is that clear? This is called the Welthuis system. It's easy for emails. So when I type Pali, if I don't have my Unicode converter with me, I just type it like this. It's code that allows us to... I'm too lazy to write it all out, but these are the only ones that are going to change. And the L, of course. So the L retroflex will be, the L alveoplasia will be like that. Okay, anyway. So if you have Ahang Bante, this should actually become, and you wouldn't write it like this, but it should sound like this. Aham Bante. This should become like an M. Because it assimilates with whatever comes after it. So because this comes after it, it assimilates to this one. Even though this is a Nigahita. Yeah, okay, maybe let's stop there because it is a lot to take in.
Just quickly, what happens when a vowel follows the nigahita?
If it's not followed by any one of these, it sounds like ang, like this one. Well, this one is actually nga, but ang. So if you have like this, this one stays as ang because the S is a waga. Waga, by the way, means group. I didn't mention that. So sa means with a group, a means without a group, ungrouped. Is everyone's brain ready to explode, or do you want to do rhythm and stress as well?
Okay, with me.
Yeah, sounds good.
I'm good.
Rhythm and stress is a lot lighter than what we just went through, I think. It's heavy, but it's quite short.
I have one question. Will this be recorded so I can go back and refresh?
Yes, it has all been recorded, so hopefully that'll work, and it'll be up on the website. Make a folder for these.
Thank you.
All letters are always... Again, I didn't write any of this. This is what he's taking from my notes. But that's basically the truth. I don't think I want to put that there. But so if someone ever gets around to explanations, we should put all sorts of explanations in here, but we don't need them. Okay, so quickly then, not quickly, but it's briefly, we'll go through rhythm and stress. Brenna, I'm going to take out the underline because I'm leaving it as, we have to change the styles to get underlined. I'm just leaving it as heading one. We want to change, we have to change styles. Change the styles? Again, paragraph styles. Yeah, you just have to update the style. Anyway, we can do that later. So rhythm and stress. We've been through a bit of this. Words are constructed from syllables. We mentioned that. A vowel is the core of the syllable. We've been through that. So nibbana is separated in this way. The vowel is the core. And how you learn to separate these two is because, as I said, you don't put... unless it's at the beginning of the word, you don't put conjunct consonants together. And the only exception that I can think of is R. Comes to me that there is an R somewhere. Very rare. And it's a sort of a corruption. It's sort of a half Sanskritization, I think. But anyway, for the most part, if you have two conjunct consonant, the first one goes with the previous syllable, the second one goes with the next syllable. Here's an example of an exception. Indriya. So here you have to separate it like this. So you do have a conjunct consonant. Okay, so for rhythm is based on short and long syllables. So if a syllable is long, it gets a full beat. We're talking about rhythm in terms of singing, in terms of chanting. So chanting actually does have a rhythm, and it's nice to get that rhythm correct, because, or I guess even though It's usually mangled, and over time it becomes corrupt because people don't, they aren't taught the correct rhythm, and or they don't keep track of the correct rhythm. They aren't clear which syllables are long and which are short. But when you do know, it makes it a lot easier to chant it correctly and, you know, all together as a group. So you're, because that's the worst thing, is when two different people are chanting with different rhythms, making short syllables long and long syllables short. So this, if you put this to rhythm, this one here, if we have a rhythm here, I'll tap it out. Ni ban, ni ban. The ni is long, the ba is long, and the na is short. I guess you can't really hear that. If we do, let's do this down here. We do the one that everyone is familiar with. Then this would be, the rhythm to this one would be Buddhang Saranang Gatami. You see the, or if I tap it out, Buddhang Saranang Gatami. So the Sarana, that's all short. These ones are all short. Well, no, sorry, these two are short. Okay, so how do we know that? A syllable is long when it contains a long vowel. So no matter what, if it has one of these five vowels in it, it's long. It can also be long when it contains a short vowel, but is followed by a consonant. So we separate this out here. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. First syllable, long. Why? Because it has a consonant at the end. That's all. Second syllable, same thing. This ang, the nigahita, is long, is a consonant. So we have long syllable. This syllable has a short vowel and has no consonant at the end. Why? Because this one always... I guess that's another rule that we have to... I mean, these rules are not exactly clear, but pick them up. The consonant always goes with the vowel after it, unless, yeah, the consonant always goes with the vowel after it. Consonant followed by a vowel, consonant always goes with the vowel in terms of making syllables. You couldn't split this up like this, even though ostensibly it seems possible. It's not. In Pali, you don't do that. Always put the consonant with the vowel that it follows. No, the vowel that follows it. Okay, so that being so, this is a short syllable. This is also a short syllable, no consonant after it. This syllable has a consonant after it, so it's long. Again, long. This one is long by default because the vowel is long. This again is the long A. I'm just too lazy to copy and paste. Okay, mi is short, but because it's at the end, you can't really hear it. But the e is short, so that's a short vowel. So the first exercise I give to people, and it's not easy to do here on the internet, it's kind of a limitation, is I give you something like Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, and I have you split it up into syllables. This is something you should become accustomed to doing, because without being able to do that, you're lost in terms of understanding which syllables are short and which ones are long. The second exercise is to actually chant out something. So I gave the person who wrote this, I gave him the reflections on the Buddha for homework. So he had to memorize it, or he had to be able to chant it with proper rhythm. Iti piso bhagava arahang samma sambundho vinja charana sampanno sugato loka vidu anut Taro purisadamma sarati satta deva manu sanang bundho bhagava. There's a rhythm to it. And it's useful when you're chanting in groups, because you'll find that if you do lots of chanting, that different groups do different rhythms, and it's quite arbitrary, really, fortunately, unless you have this guide, which now we do. If any of you know that Pali, I made a Pali speak app, which is designed to give you the proper rhythm. You plug in a Pali phrase and you hear me, computerized version of me, chanting it in the proper rhythm, no matter what you put in. Almost. App for Android. Okay, so that is rhythm. Quite simple, long and short. If it wasn't quite clear, a long syllable gets a full beat. A short syllable gets half a beat. So it's just half or full. Bundang, those are full syllables. Sa-ra, those are half syllables. Half beats. Sa-ra. Sa-ra-nang is too short, one long. Sa-ra-nang. Okay, and last thing, please don't die on me yet, just one more thing to learn is stress. And if, I'm sure everyone has a lot of stress already from all this hardcore Pali learning, but one more thing to make your brain explode. Because this one really does make your brain explode, I think, in the beginning. Read this sentence. If the word ends in a long syllable, then the stress is given to the penultimate syllable. Otherwise, it is given to the antepenultimate syllable. Luckily, he's put in brackets here what these mean, or I did, or somebody did. Okay, so to know the... Wait a second. This is wrong. This is quite wrong. Stress is given to the penultimate syllable if it is long. Oh, that was actually an incorrect statement. This is the correct statement. Stress is given to the penultimate syllable if it is long. That's the penultimate syllable, the second to last syllable. If the second to last syllable is long, that's where the stress is. That's the one that you stress. Otherwise, stress is given to the antepenultimate, which is third to last syllable. So, am I totally out to lunch here? This is all wrong. This is wrong. Tapasya is wrong. See, he got it wrong. This is where the stress goes. Tapasya. Why? Because pa is short. Okay, so here we have three syllables. The word is tapasi. Pa is the penultimate syllable, meaning second to last. But because it's short, the stress goes on the ta. Okay. Adisakara. Adisakara. Again, here's the penultimate syllable. Still short, so the stress goes on sak. And of course, my favorite.
Vipassana.
Again, penultimate syllable, sa. Right? If we split this up, it's vipassana. Penultimate is short, so So no matter what this one is, we give the stress to it. So if you want to say vipassana correctly, it's vipassana, not vipassana. Right? In English, we always give the penultimate, I believe. Or we generally do. So it's vipassana. But this should be vipassana. Adisakkara. It really makes a difference. It's more than you'd realize. It changes the word. Vipassana becomes vipassana. As opposed to this one. Penultimate syllable is long, so stress goes there. Nibbana. You want to say it's not Nibbana, it's Nibbana. It's Nibbana. That's all. That's stress. Wasn't so tough. And that's the alphabet. That's your crash course in the Pali alphabet. I guess it's a lot to take in one lesson, but you know, I think we did it in one lesson. Your homework, should you choose to accept it, is to memorize the alphabet and be able to say it back to me next week.
This is going to make a lot of things make so much more sense, because in seeing these words for the first time, I was getting all of them wrong.
Well, there you go. I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear it was useful.
Yeah, definitely. I was getting a lot wrong before this.
I mean, this isn't the most important thing as Buddhists, but it's nice to get it right. So this is a useful sort of side activity. Okay,
you
so
know, for vipassana, Bhante, in Sinhala, A and S is one letter, and then it is followed by Sa, another letter. So you never get it wrong if you just read the Sinhala.
Yeah, but it's not one letter, it's one symbol. And that's just the script. Because most scripts have, and it's only the letter A. You notice that it's only the A.
Right.
The rest of the letters will all show, like eat will have to show. But because A is the default, they just leave it out. But it is there. Technically, it is separate letters. Which, in a way, is why Roman is actually kind of good in that sense. It doesn't obscure anything.
Yeah.
Much easier to work with internationally. And you know, whatever, if you know what the letters are, but it's a bit sneaky to hide all those letters in there. And what are they hiding anyway? I'm just kidding. All good. Okay, so that's our first lesson in Pali. That was pretty good, no? Thank you all for coming.
Yay, oh, thank you, wonderful. Bhante. That was great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bhante.
Hopefully see you all next week.
I hope I'm not the half part that'll fail.
Well, you can't really fail if I don't grade your work. But it's much more up to you. I mean, how am I going to make sure that you've memorized these things? Is there a way to hold online exams? If we got you all to, if everyone had one of those, I've got this, someone gave me a electronic scratch pad, you know, artist pad, so you can actually draw electronically. Then I can have you write exams, write out the conjugations. Otherwise, how do I trust it? How could we administer exams?
Oral exams, that would actually be a lot harder. Because then you have to not only know it, but you have to be able to do it too.
Oral exams are tough. It's tough to hear over the internet, I think. But yeah, I mean, this first one we can do an oral exam. Yeah, could do actually oral exams for everything, for a lot of things, like translating from Pali to English, as long as you give me the right answer. Ah, whatever. I mean, it's not like anyone's going to cheat.
I can look at the single and cheat.
I'll have your app here.
Well, no, you can't actually, because I'm gonna call you out if you say namo tassa. I'm gonna call you out. I'm gonna say it's not. you've almost got it. And also their ta, you're gonna get it wrong if you say it the Sinhalese way. I went to learn Pali with a Cambodian monk here, and he did the same thing, but with the Cambodian, and it was all wrong. I mean, it's not wrong. It's just not. Well, it's Cambodian Pali, which the rest of us were not using. Anyway,
that ter is there, Bhante, but very rarely used.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, that's all for today. Thank you all for tuning in, and see you all next week. Peace.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you, Bhante. See you all next week.